Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's Valentine's Day and the world is bathed in red and pink. Whether you see the day as an opportunity to swoon or a manufactured corporate holiday might depend upon your perspective. Either way, plenty of people are feeling more than a little lonely this time of year. But what if your loneliness becomes more than a passing longing? Researchers say chronic loneliness is a public health crisis and a national epidemic. It's as life-threatening as smoking 15 cigarettes a day, reports show. And we wanted to know more about the impact of loneliness in people's lives, so we reached out to Ann Hankin and Pat Hammond. Hankin is a retired mental health counselor. Hammond is associate pastor of congregational care at First Presbyterian Church in Sioux Falls. They joined us in the SDPB Sioux Falls studio yesterday. Thank you so much, first of all, for being here. And we're talking about loneliness on this Valentine's Day, but there's lots of other reasons to talk about it because it's kind of having a moment, isn't it? And start talking a little bit, if you will, about why all of a sudden people, public health officials, church leadership, people are starting to, mental health workers are starting to care about this topic of loneliness.
You're right. Loneliness has become kind of a hot topic, if we can call it that, because it affects everybody at some time in their life. And we're starting to see what the public health issues are for people who are moderately to high level lonely. And they are large. They really impact populations. So,
are there actual studies coming out at this point where people can quantify it? Is it more in the wind where people are saying, I'm hearing more and more about this?
No, there have been studies since the last, I'd say, 10 years or so that we've been looking at. AARP did a big study. They were actually focusing on people 45 and older. University of California, San Diego has been doing a lot of studying and research on the topic. There's some information out of Cigna, an insurance business, who was looking at some of the health issues and
Pat, what are some of the surprises in that research for you? When you start seeing studies come in and people talking about it more and more, what are some of the things that you think, well, that wasn't exactly what I expected?
Well, generally when we think about loneliness, we think about older people, people that are without a spouse, where they're in some sort of care facility. But the statistic that was most surprising to me is that the largest group that identifies with loneliness are the Gen Zs, those that are 18 to 22, those that are coming of age right now. They represent the largest group of people who identify with loneliness. And that, to me, was very surprising. These are our kids that are lonely.
And not only surprising, but probably pretty significant indication of this being a cultural shift, not an age related or not a generational thing anymore, but maybe doesn't bode well for those kids' long-term health, maybe even at some point. This is pretty serious stuff.
What we're seeing those people who are in their young people in their 20s. Recent data is saying those people would have a more prevalence for loneliness, as well as people in their 50s and then in their 80s, even late 80s, if we happen to live that long. And actually, the data behind it's pretty logical why those age groups experience high levels of loneliness. We see a lot of transitions in those ages. We see in the middle and late ages, we see changes in our physical and mental capabilities. We see loss of time with family and friends. We see loss of friends and family.
But go back to those 20s, though, because that seems like a time when you're just surrounded by people, but it's also a time of transition from one type of living to another. Is that what's happening?
Absolutely. First jobs, moving, choosing a life partner. There are so many big decisions that are made at that time, pivotal kinds of decisions that can be impacting for your life. And it's very difficult, and people are doing it oftentimes by themselves and feeling very lonely when they do it.
The other part of that is the statistics show that social media is an even factor across the board. So social media in and unto itself is not the issue. It is the culture that social media has created. So for a lot of these 18 and 22-year-olds, and I have a daughter that resides in that group, they have what they call fake friends. They have to behave a certain way in order to be accepted by people. Social media has created a situation where people become disposable. You don't have those close one-on-one connections. You know, when we were kids growing up in the 50s and 60s, we had neighborhoods. We knew who our neighbors were. You don't have these. And these kids now that are 18 to 22 did not grow up in that same type of culture. And I think that's a big part of why they can't make connections or why they can't seem to connect with people on more of an intimate level.
So when we talk about neighborhoods, and then I'm also thinking about rural communities and church as a gathering place, and obviously as a pastor of a church, that the number of people coming to church and sort of seeing church in the same way that they used to, as a part community center, part neighborhood of its own, that is shifting as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the places people would go where you could meet people who were not always like you, but yet you would have social conversations with them, you would have coffee with them, you would do a lot of that at your churches and just being around people who are different than you. A lot of times now we intentionally seek out people who are like us. Social media helps us do that. We follow people on Twitter who are like us. We do that on Instagram, and so we automatically gravitate to people who are like us. But where do we find connections with people who are different, but yet we can still relate to them as civil human beings? We can still have connections with them. You know, where do you do that? And the church is a good place for that to happen, just by the structure of that system. But with churches declining the way they are, you're losing that kind of middle space.
And let's talk a little bit about sort of defining this, because as we're pretty far into the conversation already, and we really haven't said what loneliness is. Is this an objective thing, or we're saying you live alone, or you spend a certain amount of time alone, or is it more about perception?
I think it's more subjective. Okay. Yeah, when we talk about, to compare it to social isolation, for example, which also is an area of interest, social isolation is more measurable because we're talking about the numbers in someone's social network. When we talk about loneliness, we're talking about something that's subjective. It's a feeling that someone has. And when Pat is talking about those relationships, it's about connectivity. It's about a depth of communication that you have with people, feeling like you're really heard, feeling that someone is really listening and following what you're saying and cares.
Yeah.
And the way our culture is today, we don't have as much of that going on oftentimes. Most of us, many of us, get up, we go to work, we come home, we stay home. We spend a lot of time watching TV. We all do this. Social media, we're very dependent on our phones. But that in-depth activity of interacting with people is less, I think, than some of the things that you're describing, Pat.
And I don't want to lay too much at the feet of social media, but when you say that sort of depth of conversation, that kind of gets to what you were saying before, Pat, about you have these friendships that you think, you know, are quantifiable in some way, but you can't necessarily be yourself fully, you know, online. Or there might be consequences if you are that.
Oh, the backlash that comes from social media can be devastating. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, many people on Facebook, you know, me included, we present our best selves on there. And so we create kind of a false image of who we truly are. And we're just setting up people to not be authentic. And I think that authenticity is so important in how we can relate to one another. I think you take that out of the equation, and how can you possibly have some of these relationships that, that Anne's talking about? Where's the honesty? Where's the integrity? Where's the genuineness?
And getting back to this notion of it's a feeling, do people want to, do they, can they articulate that it's a feeling? Are they saying, I am lonely? Is there, are there challenges in even sort of claiming that as something that's part of your life?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think as helpers, and all of us can be helpers, we can all be a friend and reach out to people or walk alongside people. We can't just ask people if they're lonely, because people who have been identified as lonely, less than 10% of those people, when asked if they're lonely, answer that they are. And it's not necessarily because they don't want to say they are. I think that we often don't know what's wrong. We have a certain feeling that something's not right, that we're missing something, or that we're not connected in some kind of a way. We're really disconnected. That when you're in a room, a crowded room with a lot of people interacting, and you're not, you're very much alone, that kind of a feeling. So those people aren't saying, I'm lonely. It could be for that reason. It could be shame reasons. It could be any number of reasons. But the good news is we can do something about it. We can create communities, healthy communities for ourselves. And we as helpers can help other people do that so that they can have those healthy, strong, and really powerful relationships that can alchemize what Mary Pfeiffer says, or convert loneliness into solitude, learning to like your time being alone and make it something that's worthwhile, but not feel that depth of loneliness. Loneliness is very normal. We all feel it, but we're not talking about these moderate to high levels, this chronic loneliness that I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, and that brings us back to this notion, if you identify like, yeah, I do feel lonely, the first thing some people might do is to pick up the phone and have this sort of, but that doesn't, it's sort of like going for the, you know, the soda or the, you know, chocolate bar when you're sad. It's not really going to take care of the problem, because there's nothing necessarily real there. How long does it take to build a healthy community? What does a healthy community look like? Because it's not just about, hey, you should go to church, or you should have some friends, or you should join a book group. If those are not good fits for you, you can be lonely, you know, in any of those places, really.
Absolutely.
So how do you encourage people to seek the kind of connection that has meaning to them, whether they're introverts or extroverts or what have you?
Yeah. Well, you can start by asking people what they enjoy. I think if as a helper or as a friend, I think giving people a voice is really important. Asking them, what are you interested in? What are you feeling? It sounds like you may be feeling lonely. Are you? And letting them have a voice. And then asking them what they would be interested in doing. Would they be interested in joining a group, going with you to church? Or temple or whatever, or going to an activity with you, or reconnecting with a family member. One of the greatest things to do is to give to someone else. People find that by giving of themselves, making a contribution, it's very uplifting. So even that opportunity is really a great thing
for all people. One of the first places that this has to start is it has to start with us just noticing. First of all, noticing ourselves and how we're feeling. But also keeping an eye out for someone else. And we teach this to our kids. You know, look for somebody on the playground who's playing by themselves and ask to be their friend or play with them. But even in our workspaces where we are, we get so focused on our work and we have tunnel vision and we just want to plow through the day that we forget about the person in the cubicle next to us, or we forget the person who's in the mail room with us, and even just striking up a conversation with somebody. If you've noticed, oftentimes when you talk to somebody and you just ask a question, they'll just light up and they'll start talking, because people aren't heard. They don't have an opportunity to share a story, and everybody has a story. And it's noticing people, and then it's listening to people and having a conversation. And it could be as simple as starting at the grocery store with somebody in line at the grocery store, or somebody in the cubicle next to you, somebody at church who you see frequently, but you don't really talk to them.
Right. But someone's going to say, oh, but we're so busy. And I know here we just run on these deadlines, very tight deadlines, that the deepest, most meaningful conversations sometimes I have are actually during the show, when now we have 15 minutes blocked out to talk about loneliness. I don't know that I could spend 15 minutes at any other part of my day having an in-depth conversation like this. But it's important. I mean, a lot of people are working like that, in many different professions where they work next to people but not necessarily with them because of the pressure. How do you think that has an impact on, how these young, Gen Z folks, who are in the workforce are sort of redefining what work might even look like?
Uh-huh. We don't see each other anymore. We really don't see one another. And I think that's a great place to start. We all want to go home after work, and we want to go in our house, and we want to lay down. But, there's always some activity when you go out to get the mail. In the summertime, when you're out in your yard, there's people walking by. Just even if you say hello to them, you may be the only other voice they hear. If you greet somebody at the post office, you may be the only person that they have a connection with all day, even if it's momentarily. But even those, I think those little things will build up, and I think we have to start small steps, baby steps. Let's go back to what we know best to do and how to be human with one another.
It doesn't mean we can't have both. I mean, we can work. Use social media. We can use technology and everything, but we can also still use our humanity to communicate with each other. I mean, we
are social beings. We are meant
to do this.
We are meant to be with people,
and we're actually good at it.
Yeah. And don't you think we're better when we are with other people? And if we have those connections, it just seems to add a depth, a life to us personally.
Yeah. I want to jump ahead to those folks because you mentioned, your 20s, your 50s, which I'm guessing is a empty nest, maybe a retirement for some people age. There's those big transitions.
Chemical, women, menopause.
Sure, men, life changes.
Andropause. Yeah. And probably the first time you start thinking about your own mortality seriously.
Yeah.
As you move through your 50s.
And then in your 80s when, you might be, and I remember at my grandmother who lived until she was 93 at her funeral, one of the things I noticed was just the intergenerational group of friends that she had built. And of course it was because she had outlived so many of her friends, but she was a very social, community-oriented person. So she had gatherings at her house, and everybody in the house liked a different kind of teacup, and they always wanted the same teacup when they came, like, that's my teacup. And there were people in their 20s and people, gathering and doing fiber arts and stitching and things like that. If you're in one of those big transition phases and you recognize it, you've lost a spouse, your kids are gone to college, how can you prepare yourself to be a little bit more resilient in the face of loneliness?
There's an interesting study, and your grandmother, by the way, sounds like she was a really engaging person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And probably what they were describing in this study when they talked about wisdom. And they talked about wisdom being a way that we can guard ourselves against loneliness. And it's about learning to engage ourselves with people who are different from ourselves, which it sounds like your grandmother did, and using the knowledge that we have to welcome differences to be someone who will state an opinion about something. So, you know, and all of that is about contributing. And I think contributing is a major part. It's like belonging to me. Belonging is so foundational. I think allowing people to contribute is also very foundational. So that study is interesting. They do say that loneliness, we can really make big grounds against loneliness if we keep building through these age periods upon wisdom, upon being open, open thinking, being around different people, engaging ourselves in different activities, so we develop this wisdom in our later years, and it sustains us.
Hmm. How about advice for this generation that's out here right now and just trying to figure it out? Because they're seeking that wisdom often actively from people who have, and sometimes the solutions no longer exist. You know, well, find this, you know, find a neighborhood. Well, maybe that doesn't make sense when your neighborhood doesn't function like an older kind of neighborhood did. How about advice for those 20-somethings or those kids who are just headed off to college about how to, you know, stave off that lonely feeling when you have it before it turns into something that's unhealthy?
Stay engaged. Be true to yourself for the authenticity piece. It's easy when we're typing in things to people to not have to be authentic. We can be someone else, or we don't really have to have that depth. And I think we have to encourage people to let us know more about themselves, that in-depth relationship. So I think that young people, I think all people need to be engaging with other people face-to-face.
Face-to-face, yeah. Face-to-face. We never outgrow that.
We never outgrow that. It's a good thing.
And you guys just taught a class on loneliness for Stephen ministers. What kind of response were you hearing? What kind of questions were people asking about? Does it resonate with a lot of people?
I think it did. I had someone say something as we were moving into the other room that I really appreciated. And I was talking to the group about being introspective about this. As we notice other people who may be lonely or may just need someone to walk up to and engage with them, we need to remember as helpers what it feels like to be lonely. Sometimes it's not that easy to talk about it. And we've all been lonely at some time in our life. And she is a retired 40 years as a nurse, longtime mentor, and she said, I never really thought about it like that. But she said, that's so helpful for me to think about my own situation, my own, what it felt like, what it looks like, what it sounds like, so that I know how difficult it may be for someone else to talk about it, but so I have a deeper understanding for what that person may say to me. Not the same experience, but an understanding.
And even today, the day after, we're starting to hear from some churches that were represented there. And they are asking for more information because they want to start conversations in their own churches. We've heard from 4 churches. And so it's about planting seeds and giving people ideas on how they might carry on those conversations and just try things. So we have other churches that are now trying to engage in this conversation. And I think that's really exciting.
It's a lot less lonely when all the churches are.
Yeah. But just if there are just ways to start conversations, ways to listen to people, share stories. You know, it's back to those old front porch days. And a lot of people may see that as being old-fashioned or out of date, but there's just a richness to people's lives that they need to share. We need to hear it. And if there are any opportunities, big or small, that we can have to hear someone's story, to see them, to really see them, I think that's just also a way to honor one another.
I think we're going to all be alone, so also ways to self-nourish. do things mm-hmm. that are good for ourselves and enriching for ourselves.
Yeah.
And go out and use them.
I think that's the perfect place to leave it. Ann Hankin, Pastor Pat Hammond, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks for having us, Lori.
It's great to be here.